Now that the game is done, it's our time to check in.
Rollins steps back, cranks up a three, and he knocks it down. A cold-blooded three from the fourth-year man out of Toledo.
Butts Talk starts now.
Second win against the Bucks in the last 9 meetings. Final horn sounds, 111-100. Charlotte takes down the Bucks.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios, here's Justin Garcia.
I broke one of my major rules tonight, Matt. I saw quite a bit on social media, and especially in losses. You really want to avoid that, because this may surprise you. There's not a whole lot of balanced and rational takes.
Really?
Out there. Can we not jump to conclusions and like rush to judgment over one game out of 82 and one game out of 82 where the best player in the conference and the best player in your team isn't playing on a team where everything is built around him in this heliocentric offense? I mean, we can point out the Hornets were down their two best players. The Bucks were down their best player, arguably the best player in the league. They're still down Kevin Porter Jr. I would also argue the gap between the Hornets' two best players and everybody else is much, much, much more narrow than the gap between Giannis and everybody else. It is a stretch. I know people hate to hear it. It is a stretch of 5 games in 7 days. It's 6 games in 9 days. If you go back to the Bulls game, it's going to be like this again to close out the month. We heard from Doc before the game. This was basically a game that they had targeted and said, because of that, let's sit him here and build in some more off time for Giannis. All of those things apply. It doesn't excuse everything we saw. I mean, it wasn't great. I won't deny that. But what I've seen a lot of so far, I mean, it doesn't need to be pointed out. The thought of like, well, if Giannis isn't going to play, this team might be in trouble. I mean, do you think? That's how the team was built coming into the season. And like, well, what if Giannis doesn't play in a playoff game? We've seen it for 2+ years now. Doesn't yeah, they're work. Not going to be good yeah. if that's the case. So in terms of like, let's jump to the worst case scenario, I'm nowhere near there. You continue to really, really like what you see from Ryan Rollins. That Miles Turner was okay tonight, right? He scored 21 points. It wasn't a great night for Miles Turner. It wasn't really a great night for anybody but Ryan Rollins. And that's the disappointing part, is a night like tonight, when you don't have Giannis, you knew coming into this game what you needed. Either Ryan Rollins or Miles Turner, because all of a sudden, what are we now? 12 games? 12 games into the season, those two guys have become, really, Rollins, your most consistent offensive player outside of Giannis. So you knew coming into this, you needed that type of performance from one or both of those guys. But to me, Cole Anthony and Bobby Portis were two very important guys in this game tonight, because you just need that unconventional scoring punch and somebody else that's going to step in and carry the stretch of minutes that they're on the floor with that second unit. Cole Anthony didn't have it tonight, and he's been very Jekyll and Hyde so far this season. You can get by with that when Giannis is on the floor, but these are the games where it looms large. AJ Green and Gary Trent Jr. were not good tonight. And look, that's the elephant in the room. Gary Trent Jr. hasn't been good to start the season, but that's another thing where you see, well, we're too small and this and that. I mean, it's true. And there are some issues that this team is going to need to figure out fast. Rebounding. But everybody that's complaining about this group being too small and Gary Trent Jr. getting off to a slow start, the same ones that loved the fact that they're leaning into that five-man unit that played to close out the season, like, play that. Those should be your starters. We're doing it. And now I think you're seeing some of the reasons why we kept stressing. It's a small sample size. It worked to an extent in the playoffs, but by worked, it just means it was your best option in a series you still lost in five games. That was the big thing, and it continues to be the big thing here early in the season, is during the offseason, when you saw how this team was being set up and you knew, okay, that group that we heard from John Horst, small sample size, but we believe in it, we're going to get a chance to see it. We're going to get a chance to see how this works and looks for extended periods of time here. But the big, big pushback was big wings and who's going to defend on the perimeter. I'm guilty of this too. None of us ever brought up rebounding. It was who's going to take on those defensive assignments. That certainly hasn't been great. They're still searching for it. But the rebounding has been an even bigger issue than who's matching up with who on the perimeter, because if you're not rebounding the ball, if you're not getting defensive rebounds, you're giving your opponent countless second chance opportunities. I mean, it's a cliche, but in the case of the Bucks, statistically, it is true. More often than not, those second chance opportunities lead to three-pointers. And if you want to know why we went from the first week, like 4 or 5 games of the season, saying, all right, like this group, this is what I envisioned. This defense looks much improved. Everything was kind of falling into place. They were at least holding their own. They weren't really starting to lose hold of the rope yet in terms of their rebounding numbers. They have since. And you've gone from a, at best, when everything was clicking, a top 10 offense and defense, and I know that's a very, very small sample size, but top 10 to now, I don't know where they're going to be after this. I haven't looked it up yet, but coming into play tonight, they were hovering around 20th. You're routinely sitting there close to the bottom 10 in defenses. You know, like this is a more talented defense than the group the Bucks had 2.5 years ago when you finished right around the same spot, and midway through the season, you were sitting even worse and made a coaching change. There's still plenty of time to turn this around, but those are the two big things: defensive rebounding and fouls. All of the foul aspect, putting your opponents at the line, not getting to the line, and then when you do get there, not hitting free throws. I mean, I can't stress enough. It hasn't been great to start the season. Cumulatively, the way the Bucks have played, you're 7-5. Do you view that as this is fool's gold, or okay, there's still room for improvement here and they can continue to get better and better and better? Because I think what we're seeing is there's a lot of teams that are going to be pecking around that order where the Bucks are in the Eastern Conference. The Cavs had a tremendous comeback tonight. Cleveland, by the way. I mean, this is the league. Cleveland won without their three best players. Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, Evan Mobley, all out tonight. They were down 14. They came back to beat the Miami Heat. Cleveland looks like they're starting to refine their form. New York has been very, very good to start the season. The Bucks beat them. They got manhandled tonight by the Orlando Magic. So I don't know if we really have that top tier of teams in the Eastern Conference, or if it's who we thought it was going to be coming into the season, a season where now the Detroit Pistons are 10-2 to start things. But if we're going to have all these teams lumped together, which coming into play today was, what, a four-way tie for second place? Four-way tie for third, I believe, and the Bucks were in there. I think that's what we're going to have for the duration of the season, is you're going to have a top tier that the separation isn't quite as wide as we thought it would be. And then you're going to have like 4 or 5, maybe even 6 teams that are right there trying to avoid the play-in tournament. And the chances are the Bucks are going to be in that group. So how you clean some of these things up going forward is really going to determine where this group ultimately finishes the season. 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited talking text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Look, I would assume there's a lot of frustration out there with a loss like that. The Hornets are not a good team. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's very disappointing to lose to a bad team and to lose to a bad team that's down their two best players. But this year's version of this Bucks team, it's different when you don't have Giannis. I mean, we can point to the Warriors game all we want. That was the Ryan Rollins revelation, for one, and your role players played very well in that game, which they tend to do at home. But let's also not discount the fact that the last handful of years, the Golden State Warriors have proven to be a pretty poor road team. It's going to be different when you don't have Giannis this year, because there is no Dame. There is no Drew Holiday. There is no Chris Middleton that you can just say, okay, Giannis is gone, so now this guy's the main guy and everybody else can play the same role. When he's gone, everyone's role changes. That is the biggest difference from this year's team to any of the previous 7 or 8 years we've seen this group together. 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited talk and text line. Your thoughts, are those excuses? Are you more down on this Bucks team than you were a week ago? We'd love to hear it. Gary Trent Jr., I mentioned the struggles he's going through. I do want to take a look at some of that, because this is starting to feel like deja vu all over again. And then, of course, you get to see the same team on Friday night. I expect a much, much different outcome, largely because they're not going to come out and say it, but I think we heard before the game from Doc, Giannis is going to play on Friday, and that certainly changes things. But you got a very, very tough stretch of games coming up after that. And you're going to drop games to bad teams. Every team does it. It's not exclusive to the Bucks. As we just said, Miami Heat are probably one of those teams that may finish right where the Bucks are, slightly ahead or slightly behind. They've been playing pretty well of late. They just lost to a Cavs team who I know won 64 games last year, but a Cavs team that was playing without their three best players in a game that Miami led by double digits in the second half. So this happens to every team. But these are the types of games where it really stings in relation to your schedule and what you have after this. So we'll explore that as well coming up next on Bucks Talk. All right, a disappointing one tonight, 111-100. The Bucks just have not looked crisp on this road trip, certainly. And this part of the schedule, this little cluster, if you just look at the opponent records, these were big because of how other teams are playing. You can still go 2-1, which you should expect to go 2-1. But in relation to the games you had prior to this and afterward, it's too early to call anything must-win. You really wanted to go 3-0. Two games against the Hornets, one game against a team that's just in complete disarray in the Dallas Mavericks. And, you know, that game, similar to the Pacers game, it took a lot to put those teams away who have not been good so far this season. Now, what's the other side of that coin? You gave the Houston Rockets everything they could handle, and you lost, right? I mean, it's not a moral victory. We said the same thing about the Cleveland Cavaliers, where you really fought them and contested them. You've played pretty well against the good teams in the league. You've played meh, you know, like not great against the lower-rung teams. And maybe that's the identity of this team this season, or at least in the short term, that they just they're going to play to the level of their competition, especially when Giannis is not on the floor. 855-616-1620 is the Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk as this team drops a tough one to the Charlotte Hornets. 111-100, it wasn't as close as the 11-point margin of defeat here. And, you know, in the second half, it just seemed like the Bucks could never get over that hump and get any closer than like 9 points. They had opportunities. Hornets had a couple of stretches in that third where they just weren't knocking down shots and they were leaving the door wide open for you to take advantage, but the Bucks just could not do it. Now you regroup against this same team in the NBA Cup. We'll take a look at the Bucks Group C. The schedule they have, the standings, point differential, all the details you need to know about the NBA Cup coming up in just a moment. We did not get a chance to hear him due to technical difficulties on the radio network portion of the postgame, but we do have the postgame comments from Doc Rivers. So let's give a listen to what Doc Rivers had to say and see what the takeaways are from this one.
Today, offense could be a struggle. Four shots for AJ, five for Gary.
Yeah, I just didn't think the ball moved much. Even when we did get downhill, we took tough in-between jump shots all night. Good lesson for us. I think AJ and Gary probably understand the importance of Giannis more than anybody tonight. But I think our team, this is a good lesson for us, too. I think we could see a lot of things that we could have done better. I thought Ryan played really well overall under pressure. We got killed on the glass again. But it was just more the ball movement to me offensively. You look at it, they shot 44%. We shot 45%. We set offense back tonight, both teams, you know. But they did theirs better because when they missed, they got it back and then scored.
We've talked about offensive rebounding for the other team for a while. Like, what's the answer there, I guess, as you're seeing? Because clearly teams are going to try to do that.
Well, I mean, listen. I thought early on we were really good at it, and then the last four or five games we've struggled. We knew tonight with the one kid, he's a terrific offensive rebounder. He had 10 against us last year. He did it again tonight. He was phenomenal. We knew Houston was going to be. Houston does it against everybody. But then Dallas got some, so we got to get back to our principles. It still comes down to keeping the ball out of the paint. If our bigs are not helping, they have bodies on bodies. Our bigs are in rotation too much, and now we're giving up offensive rebounds.
When you look at the three-point shooting for you guys tonight, I think without the threes hitting the last little bit, have been the fewest threes you had the entire game.
Yeah.
The entire season.
Yeah.
Just is that kind of what we're talking about when we're talking about creating and not having Giannis?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. But I thought there were opportunities tonight. We just didn't take them. And then the ones we got, we rushed and didn't make, you know. But I just didn't think we were settling on the first option the entire night. I can't wait to see our sets, how many one-pass shots that we took tonight. That's just not how we've ever played, but that's how we played tonight.
When you look at that game in Toronto, it felt like Cole kind of won that game for you.
Yeah.
Last week or so.
Yeah, he struggled. He's been last two or three games, he's not at his best game. So we got to get him back. Right. Like we cut it to seven. He took two tough shots in a row. He's got to know time and place. He's got to know the way we want to play. He'll get there.
Conversely, how excited is it that Ryan, even on a night without Giannis?
Yeah, Ryan is just a good basketball player. I keep saying it every night in every city. That's how we don't look at him as, hey, we're proud of Ryan tonight. He's a good basketball player. What do you want? Huh?
I'm on tonight game question, if I may.
Okay, I like those better, especially tonight.
You know, I always give you good questions.
Yes.
Lenny Wilkins. That you know well.
Yeah.
Atlanta Hawks and more. What were your recollections of Lenny Wilkins when you were a player?
Just everything. As a player, I remember him as a fiery coach. You know, it was so funny. He was such a gentle human being. But he had a fire. You don't win that much being meek. You know, he's the greatest example I think I've ever seen of a guy who can be nice and deadly at the same time. And that's who he was.
When you look at, I guess, coaches throughout the league, I feel like oftentimes you're put on that Mount Rushmore now. You know, Jackson, Greg Popovich, and others. Lenny doesn't necessarily get
that. Yeah, he never gets his due. I said it the other night. You know, he never got his due for how great of a coach he was. Someone said a stat, and I think it's true. He never coached a Hall of Famer, yet he had that record. That's unbelievable coaching, and no one gave him credit for it. You know, it's just too bad. We're talking about it now. We should have been talking about it 15 years ago.
All right, Doc Rivers, after tonight's, on paper, 11-point loss, it wasn't. The margin was higher than that. Three-point shooting, a big part of it. That is something to investigate. It's part of it is not having Giannis and the type of shots that you create, the looks that you create. But you know, we heard coming into the season, we want to play at a faster pace. We want to take more threes. And the Bucks' best stretch so far this season was the first, what, five or so games of the season. They were doing that. The volume has started to drop off. The pace, look, I did not expect, even saying we want to play at a faster pace, I didn't expect that to be the Bucks are going to be one of the top five teams in pace in the league. And they haven't been. But it started to creep backward even more. 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. They now get ready for a second game against the Charlotte Hornets team in the NBA Cup group play Friday night at Fiserv Forum. We'll take a closer look at that one and head out to the phone lines and hear from a few of you looking to chime in on this performance tonight and these last couple of games and what we've started to see build up as trends for this Bucks team. We will get to you after this on Bucks Talk. 111-100, the final tonight. The Charlotte Hornets sting the Bucks and drop the team to 7-5. Up and down last handful of games after a very strong start to the season for the Bucks. It's still early. I mentioned Gary Trent Jr. He struggled of late. AJ Green has struggled too. In terms of record, let's not forget, this team was 2-8 last year with guys really struggling through your first 10 games. What, three? I believe they were 3-9, 12 games into the season a year ago. Certainly in a much better spot than they were then, with much higher expectations a year ago. But it doesn't absolve some of what we've seen, and it doesn't mean there isn't a lot of work to be done and things that need to clean up for this team to continue to take a step forward. And you know, if we just judge it off the last week and a half, to take a step forward. 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited talk and text line. Let's head to the phone lines and check in with Bob in Menasha. You're up next.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. It's tough. How do you know where to start? You know what I'm getting at? You know, some of those trends are starting to show up way too often. You know, Doc keeps saying the same thing, lack of ball movement, you know, lack of, you know, we're not getting the fall line enough and so forth. We're not rebounding. It's getting to be an old sound coming from him, I think. And that's what's sort of scary. You know, I was looking at the Pistons tonight. You know, they keep winning. They had their two studs out tonight. Cunningham didn't play, and neither did the center play. They got about a 6'9 playing at the pivot. Remember, his name is Reed. You know what he's all about? I think he played at DePaul years ago. And they keep winning. They're young. They're very young. And I keep looking at the Orlando Magic. You know, they keep winning. But they're winning a lot of games. Yeah. They're very young also. Like you said a few moments ago, that Eastern Division's going to be tough, isn't it? You know, it'd be tough to break into the top three or four, don't you agree? Wow.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Bob. It is still too early to know who's going to finish where, but I think so far my bigger takeaway is just that the gap between the top tier of teams and that next tier is not as wide as we anticipated. And I don't know that the two teams we assume were in the top tier are the two. Maybe there's three teams. Maybe the Pistons knock somebody else out. But that middle group, that second group of teams, I still think right now the Bucks are in there, but it's going to be crowded. You know, if Miami's going to continue to play like this, if New York or Cleveland ultimately settles in there, if Detroit settles into there, if Chicago keeps doing what they're doing, if Toronto starting to play better, Orlando is starting to play better, Atlanta's been disappointing, they're starting to play better. So I think there's a lot of teams that are fighting it out for right around the same spot in the Eastern Conference, and that makes cleaning these things up all the more important for the Bucks. You know, especially on the glass, where to suggest the Bucks would be this poor at rebounding the ball after a sample size of seven seasons and what we saw with a lot of the same pieces. I know there's been large changes, but to go from one of the elite teams at rebounding the basketball to it being as problematic as it's been has been the biggest issue they've faced so far this season. 855-616-1620. The number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Let's grab one more here. Mark in New Berlin, you're up next.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. First of all, I'd just like to say shout-outs to Con Canepo, 16 points for the rookie, unbelievable. But another thing that I think has to stop in the NBA is resting these players. Granted, Giannis might be hurt, but the chances are they just rested him, thinking, hey, we're playing the Hornets, let's give him a little rest. You got to play with these players and mesh with them a little. You know, you can't just expect these guys, you know, you got to mesh with them. You know, you can't just always just, this player's taking these days off and they make $500,000 a game. That malarkey just has to stop.
No, it's not.
You know, you got to mesh with your players and your team. Come on now. We know why Giannis took off. This was supposed to be a gimme. You know it. I know it. Doc knows it. This was a gimme. But it didn't turn into a gimme. You know, and these other players are just helter-skelter, high night at the YMCA. You know, so Giannis has to play with these guys. You got to play with them. You got to get them to know your tendencies. You know, Rollins doesn't know Giannis yet. What? How many games are we into the season? You know?
You play with him
it's
last
just,
year.
I'm just frustrated with this, you know. You know why Giannis took off. We know why Giannis took off.
Well, first
he
of all,
wouldn't even want to go on the trip.
Hang on. Thanks for the call, Mark. First of all, Giannis didn't take off. Giannis was held out. And yeah, it's not ambiguous. Doc said so before the game. But I get that there's this frustration with load management, but what I would say is that was 5 years ago. That was 3 years ago. It's not the same landscape as it once was. And the real issue is the schedule itself. Like if you want to eliminate players taking rest days, drop the schedule to 60 games. That's never going to happen because of the money that's in there. You know, Doc said before the game, this was circled for Giannis because they're playing five games in 7 days. And look, it's frustrating to not see him on the floor. I get that. It'd be even more frustrating if this was a home game and you had tickets and show up and Giannis isn't there. But games like this, to me, illustrate the opposite in why these rest days are even more important than ever. Because you push Giannis through the wall and, all right, we're playing five games in 7 days. You're playing all five of them. And we're just going to continue to carry and build up this fatigue, especially with a guy where you got to monitor that left knee. You know, it's not just this year or last year. It's the last couple of years to continue to see left knee patellar tendinopathy on the injury report. He gets a sore knee that you have to manage and monitor. If you don't have Giannis, none of this matters anyway. You're not doing anything in the playoffs. As great as Ryan Rollins has been, you know, we talked about there is more depth on this team. Maybe you wouldn't believe it after seeing tonight, but there is more depth on this team than there was a season ago. And arguably the past few seasons. I mean, they were a very top-heavy team, which is why it was always frustrating when Giannis would miss time. But the difference was, all right, Giannis isn't playing tonight. It's going to be a Dame game, or it's going to be a Chris Middleton game, or 3 years ago, it's going to be a Drew Holiday game. That's not the way the team is structured anymore. So, I mean, I would argue with the opposite. You know, Giannis is going to miss 15 games this year. Maybe less, but it's going to be 10 to 15 games. That's what it's been year after year after year. And, you know, it wasn't the Hornets specifically and saying, well, we can beat this team. It was where it fell on the calendar of, all right, here, if he sits this game, then we can turn this into 3 days off leading into a back-to-back. I mean, they have a sports science team and a medical staff that can break this down. I mean, they're not going to share the exact data with you or I, but I've heard, in layman's terms, them describe what a full day off does if you equate it to basically recharging your battery versus the, like, let's play Giannis reduced minutes and how much of an impact that makes. That's what they lean on for these decisions. And I would much rather lose a game to the Charlotte Hornets in November because Giannis did not play and your offense looked clunky and you weren't rebounding the basketball and it was a frustrating night all around, I would much rather lose that game in November without Giannis on the floor than push him through a 5 games in 7 day stretch and then the knee soreness continues to build and it's, oh, tweak the knee, he's going to miss 2 weeks, and now this absence isn't one game, it's 6 games or something along those lines, because maintaining his health is all that matters right now. You know, we've seen playoff games. A team that had Damian Lillard, we've seen playoff games in series without Giannis. You're not going anywhere. And with this team especially, you know, even if this group continues to develop chemistry and Ryan Rollins continues to become the guy that we're seeing more and more flashes of, you find more and more secondary scorers. Miles Turner continues to grow in his new role with the team. If you don't have Giannis, it doesn't matter. You're not going to get out of the first round. So, I mean, you have to just look at the big picture with this. Yeah, it's frustrating, and it's a bummer that you didn't get to see him. It's even more frustrating you lose to the Charlotte Hornets. But I can guarantee you, it is better than the alternate. And I'm not saying, well, if you played him today, he's going to get injured. But I would much rather be safe and say, okay, let's build in 3 days off here. 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. A lot of frustration from this one. It wasn't pretty. The offense was not pretty. And those are some of the other things. We've touched a lot on rebounding. I feel like I talk about it every postgame. Rebounding is an issue. Free throws. I mean, those were the two differences in this game tonight. Hornets got to the line more than you did. Every opponent is making more free throws than you are. And the Hornets outworked you on the glass. Again, you know, Musa Diabate, I don't know if he does this to every team, but every game I've seen him play against the Bucks, he does it to the Bucks. They're getting crushed on the glass. And if you're going to give up second chance points and get dominated in second chance points and points at the free throw line, you better hit 23s. That's the spot that the Bucks have slowly started to dwarf into now. So offense this week has not been good. With or without Giannis, there are opportunities, especially against these last two opponents. We'll take a look at some of those numbers. Some of the individual numbers that we've seen through these first 12 games as well. Coming up next on Bucks Talk. 11-point road loss to the Charlotte Hornets. Now, no Giannis, but no real help for Miles Turner or Ryan Rollins tonight. Well, not fair. Bobby Portis was another guy that gave you some meaningful production, but you just needed more. And I think Cole Anthony, another guy, case in point, we heard Doc Rivers talk about him when asked about a stretch there where Cole had some tough shots that didn't fall, and you heard Doc say time and place. Like, Cole Anthony, there's going to be games like this. There's going to be games like Toronto. There's going to be games like Golden State where he makes a noticeable impact. I mean, he won the Raptors game. But that's the type of player he is. You take the good with the bad. Tonight, though, tonight was one of the nights you really needed the good. 855-616-1620 is the Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Let's head back to the phone lines. Joe in Kenosha, you're up next.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Good, Joe. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Tough one, certainly. And certainly the tone of your voice speaks volumes. I guess my only comment is, and again, it's late in the evening and you're about ready to wrap it up, but it's obvious, and I'm kind of at an arm's length fan. You know, I'm not totally invested, but I love the Bucks. But certainly I can see, as a basketball guy, and I think a lot of people can see, you know, we ride on Giannis's back, and that's just the bottom line with this team. We don't have Brooks Lopez anymore. You know, we don't have Chris Middleton anymore. You know, we could go on and on about the veteran players that are no longer there that supported Giannis. you know, we'll never forget the run in 2021. What an amazing ride that was. Now it's a 4 years later. What a difference. And what I've got to say is, and this is going to sound far-fetched, but the back or the head office needs to get on the phone. And there needs to be some blockbuster trades. And I think we need to bring in two people. And whether it's Tyrese Halliburton, God forbid I say that, do I say Jalen Brunson? Do I say Tyrese Maxey from Philadelphia? The guy from the Phoenix Suns. Drawing a blank right now.
Devin Booker.
Good guard, played for Kentucky. That's four names right there that are off the charts good. And if you bring two of those guys into Milwaukee to support Giannis, then we fly, you know. That's my opinion. I think your first question is going to be, well, that's well stated. That's nice. But how in the world are you going to get these guys? Devin Booker was the guy from Phoenix. That's who I was thinking of. God, you know, how in the world are we going to get these two of these four guys? Well, I don't have the answer to that. And that's why the people in the head office, I think, are getting paid what they get paid to do. I guess maybe an example would be, look at Micah Parsons with the Packers. How in the world did that happen mid-season? Again, that may be apples and oranges to compare it like that, but I'm just saying they need to step up and make some changes. This is not going to work. And at the end of the season, it's probably be a little bit futile, and we're going to say goodbye to Giannis after this year if things don't change.
Well, it's a really bleak outlook there. Thanks for the call, Joe. Look, I talked about this. I don't recall where, another show before the season started. You know, a lot of the lack of belief in this team coming into the season was what Joe laid out, that you list them name by name, the guys that have left. Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton, maybe to a lesser extent, Brooke Lopez, at least in the eyes of Bucks fans and everything that we heard last year about that. But all of these name value players that are gone, and you look at a group that's largely unproven, there's skepticism and a lack of belief there. But if we have learned anything from John Horst, it's kind of what Joe got at. Now, I don't know about the names that he brought up, but if we've learned anything from John Horst, it's that nothing is really impossible. I didn't think it was possible for the Bucks to get Drew Holiday. I certainly didn't think a package that they gave the Pelicans of two first-rounders, two swaps, George Hill and Eric Bledsoe, was going to be enticing enough to land Drew Holiday. I thought there was no way, even less of a chance, they would get Damian Lillard. I mean, on a much smaller scale, you think about other moves that were made at trade deadlines. Neither of them worked out, to be clear. But what the Bucks gave up to get Nikola Mirotic, where you just turn things into 4 second-round picks, you get Mirotic. Jay Crowder, that was 5 second-rounders and the moves that you had to swing there. What did work out? P.J. Tucker, and that was another one where, you know, there was all this smoke. The Bucks are interested in P.J. Tucker. He'd make a ton of sense. Everybody wanted to see it. But what assets do you have? And somehow the Bucks were able to take these players they had signed that weren't working out. DJ Wilson, DJ Augustine, one of the guys that they had signed, and turn it into PJ Tucker. So John Horst has always had this way of finding a deal that you or I don't perceive as possible or see being there. That being said, those names are not happening. Those names are all untouchable. The New York Knicks are not trading you Jalen Brunson unless you want to give them Giannis. And even then, I think they'd say, I don't know. Why don't we just wait until he hits free agency and see if we can lure him here? The Indiana Pacers are not trading you Tyrese Halliburton. And down the list, Tyrese Maxey is, that's Tyrese Maxey's team now in Philly. Joel Embiid, They're moving into a new era. Devin Booker, the other name that was brought up. I mean, I suppose in terms of all the names that were listed, that would be the most attainable. Although everything we hear out of Phoenix and Matt Ishbia is he's off the table. Conventional wisdom would say it's probably time to trade him. But here's the holdup with Devin Booker. He makes $57 million next season, and eventually that contract goes up to $65 and $70 million. Here's the big thing with this group. To get back to the original point, I said this elsewhere. The skepticism and the lack of belief in this team, what you have to keep in mind is you're viewing this under the lens of the team right now. Everything we said about John Horst, I have very little to no reason to believe the team right now is the team at the end of the season, is the team after the trade deadline. You do have more that becomes available to you. You know, if you wait until the summer, for example, which I know is not the trade deadline, doesn't help you in the here and now, but over the summer, you go from 1 to 3 first-round picks that become available to work in a trade. I hate talking about player names specifically with trades. Obviously, it's a touchy situation with my role with the team, but I'll just say you have one expiring contract that's a pretty sizable contract this summer that you could attach first-round picks to. So they're going to have things opening up at the very least over the summer. I would assume, depending on what they do, you know, leading up to the trade deadline, that's going to determine how aggressive John Horst is at the trade deadline as well. But I don't know what to expect. You know, it's not a cop-out to say, hey, I don't think this team's going to be the same all throughout the year, but I don't know how different it's going to look. And it's for one reason alone. It's the CBA. You know, this league, more than any other one, you bring up the Micah Parsons, it is an apples to oranges comparison. Because I know the NFL has a salary cap, but the cap and how complicated it is in the NBA, this CBA has made it incredibly difficult for a handful of teams to make deals. And whether or not it's an overreaction to trying to curb player movement and create more parity and give every team a chance is up for debate, but that's where we are. You have teams that are second apron teams, which means cannot aggregate salaries. You can't take a guy making $4 million and another guy making $6 million and trade that to a team for a player making $10 million. That's out the window. The Bucks are not, to be clear, a second or first apron team, so they don't have to worry about any of that. But you have a handful of those teams that are second apron teams. They can't do that. They can't take back more money in a trade. They can't send out cash in a deal. First apron teams, you know, same story. You're hard capped at that apron level if you did a sign and trade over the summer, if you took back more money in a previous trade. So it just becomes incredibly complicated to pull off these trades. It's not as simple as looking at it and saying, well, you know, in the old days, as in 3 years ago, this guy makes $10 million. You can take back more money a trade. It's 125%. So you can take back a guy that's making $12.5 million. Perfect. Let's do this trade. There's so many other lever and layers to all of it now. But to me, outside of that, and just how difficult it is when you talk about teams getting hard capped at various apron levels and trying to wrap your mind around what does an apron even mean, the bigger thing that I think we have learned these last 2 years and why I keep going back to, let's just see how this develops, is depth is more important than anything else. It is no longer the day and age of building super teams. And the unfortunate thing for the Bucks is they got into the super team business just as that business was going out of business or being abolished, basically, and saying, we're not doing this anymore. We're going to make it incredibly difficult for you to win consistently and build a team when you have your team structured as such, where there's multiple high, high-level contracts on your team. And just think about that. The last 2 years, the Bucks were impacted by that as much or more than any other team because of how difficult it was to round out the rest of your roster. I mean, you go back to the title season and how up against the cap the Bucks were, the apron levels. You carried, and granted, one of those guys has developed into an NBA caliber player, a rotational player for a good team, but you carried Sam Merrill and Jordan Wara on your team as second round picks because you had to, you know, not because it made your team better, because rookie second round contracts were worth significantly less than an NBA veteran minimum contract. And that's how tight you were against the cap. They had to do that for years. Things like you can only give out minimum level contracts. You don't have things like the mid-level exception to use. Trades that you cannot make. It makes it very difficult to round out your roster and build up reliable depth, which is kind of a, you know, a double whammy. Because if you are going to be an older veteran team that's top heavy, what happens when one of those guys misses time or goes down for an extended period, which we have seen seemingly every year since the Bucks won a championship? You are now relying on guys that, if we're being frank, you shouldn't. That's where the Bucks found themselves the last 3 years. This offseason was a recognition, I think, and you could argue whether or not it was too late, but it was a recognition of this isn't the way to compete and win in this league anymore. You have to have two-way players. You cannot lean into one style of play. You can't say, well, this guy's really good offensively. I know he's a turnstile defensively, but we think we can make it work. You can't win that way anymore. Offenses are too good in this league. Coaching is too good. Scouting is too good, where teams know how to scheme and attack. 2 years ago, the Bucks had several of those types of players. I mean, your backcourt defensively was Damian Lillard and Malik Beasley. You need to get stops, right? You need to score and get stops. So this offseason, the Bucks said, okay, we're not rounding out a roster full of guys who are going to be in contention for all NBA. I mean, certainly Giannis and maybe Miles Turner can remain to hover around that level. Who maybe Ryan Rollins gets there is what we've really learned and saw flashes of a season ago, but just don't have weak spots. Last year, I talked about minimize your liabilities on the floor. They have really leaned into that the last couple of years. And now the big thing is this guy may not be viewed as a great defender. He's not a bad defender. That's the more important part, is to just have two-way players and depth. That's where the league is headed. And why I say all of that is, you know, I hate to even go down this road, but since he brought it up, none of us know what's going to happen in the future. Period, right? Full stop. But none of us know what's going to happen in the future with Giannis. Only one person knows that. And any type of reporting that you hear on that, I mean, I can assure you, Giannis is as private a guy and keeps things as close to the vest as possible. So, sure, there may be some tea leaf reading and everything else, but Giannis and his camp aren't going out blabbing things to, like, create leverage. So none of us know is the point. But I think there's a couple of things to keep in mind there. I mean, first and foremost, Giannis had a front-level seat to see the other side of the coin. If he were to at some point say, it's not going to work here, it's time to move on, he for 2 years had a front row seat to see another superstar. Not his level in terms of talent, but a very, very good player, an elite player in the league, come to his team in a trade. And it did not work out. Giannis didn't get blamed. And look, I'm not saying one of these guys should have been blamed one way or another, but Giannis didn't get any of the blame in why the pairing of he and Damian Lillard didn't work out. It was the new guy. It was the guy that came in to try and fit in, and it went, well, didn't work out. That was a bad trade. Shouldn't have done it. Would have rather kept Drew Holiday. Dame's fault, yada, yada, yada. Anywhere you go, if it doesn't work out, that's what you're looking at. And the chances are, just look through the years, those types of trades, it doesn't work out. It's even more difficult in this iteration of the league to win with that type of team because of the CBA, because of the cap implications. You know, Giannis making the money that he's making. Who's the team right now that is comprised of guys that are making $10 million and ultra competitive, competitive enough to win for a championship? I mean, a year ago, I suppose you could have said the Houston Rockets, they added Kevin Durant. The San Antonio Spurs, they have Victor Wembanyama. And that's the other thing. That's Victor Wembanyama's team. The Atlanta Hawks, I suppose, is the one you could throw up, but there's still other contracts there. The point is, the day and age of winning with two max contracts or close to it, I think it's gone. And the best route forward is going to be where you're at and finding pieces that fit and talent. This is a larger conversation to be had, certainly. I did not intend to get to the future of Giannis. But when it's all said and done, when we get to the end of this season, we may very well look back and say, man, you know who is one of the most important players in Giannis's time here? I mean, obviously, Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, Brooke Lopez, the guys that you won a championship with. But as you enter the next phase, man, was Ryan Rollins one of the most important finds that John Horst has ever had because of what you would potentially be facing and saying, I don't know, you know, a year ago, just think about where they were at. And if you didn't make that trade for Kyle Kuzma, who up until tonight has been tremendous for the Bucks this season, but if you didn't make that trade, and, you know, let's just say, in this sliding doors scenario, everything else stays the same except for you don't make that trade at the deadline. You are a second apron team. And if you don't make that Kuzma Middleton for Kuzma trade, remember, you gave cash in the trade that brought in Jericho Sims. So you can't make that deal. DeLon Wright is still on the team. Jericho Sims is still in New York. You could still make the Kevin Porter Jr. deal, but you are a second apron team. And you just witnessed Damian Lillard tear his Achilles and go down, and you're a second apron team that has $55 million in dead cap space with Chris Middleton with 1 year remaining on his contract and no avenue for really improving your roster enough. Now, you could say, well, we could still wave and stretch Dame. Sure. But in this scenario, does Tyrese Halliburton also tear his Achilles and go down? And in that scenario, is Miles Turner made available? You don't have quite as much cap space. You don't have enough to sign a $25 million player because you have Chris Middleton's salary versus Kyle Kuzma's. And again, unless you do that and wave and stretch Dame, you can't do anything else other than add minimum contracts. You can't trade out and aggregate deals. You can't take in more money in a trade. So in that scenario, then it's bleak. You know, there's a couple of those moments of like, wow, what Ryan Rollins looks like he's developing into and how he fits next to Giannis, this could reshape where you're going from now, but also that trade, as much as it was a bummer to see a guy like Chris Middleton and everything that he meant to this organization, as much as it frankly sucked to see him leave, it was looking really bleak if you're still a second apron team, you're a year older, and you don't have Damian Lillard playing this season, you still owe him $110 million. Like, that's the doomsday scenario for this team. Finding the pieces that fit, continuing to get Ryan Rollins to play like he has, where he has fully ascended to, look, even when Kevin Porter Jr. does return, which from the sounds of it should be the first week of December. So we're still a couple of weeks away from it. But even when he's back, Ryan Rollins is the starter. You figure everything else after that. You know, whether or not it's KPJ and Rollins are starting at the guard position. And then who knows, right? Do you start AJ Green next to that? Do you start Gary Trent Jr. next to that? Do you revisit everything entirely? But his growth, his development to be a two-way player on and off the ball, who's a catch-and-shoot guy, too, that fits perfectly next to Giannis, is a godsend for this team. And now, you know, Kevin Porter Jr., the way that he fit with this group, and what we saw in, granted, 9 minutes, but the 9 minutes to start this season, if you get, you know, maybe not Ryan Rollins level growth this season, but if he continues to, okay, yeah, this is, he looks more like the guy that killed the Bucks for 50 points, what, 5 years ago already, than the guy that was just inefficient with the Clippers. If that's the case, those are the moves that we're talking about. Finding younger talent that can play on both ends of the floor and figuring out how to make that fit around Giannis and then say, we have other things that are open for us in the offseason where we can continue to tweak and supplement this roster. But big game hunting, that's not going to be it. You know, I would be stunned if we see another one of those types of trades as long as Giannis is here because of what this league has moved towards. You're not winning with multiple $50 million or close contracts anymore. You need one star or not even, right? Superstar, at least. You need a clear-cut best guy and pieces that fit around him. And the Bucks can clearly build a roster like that now much easier than the past, where it was Giannis and Dame, and how do we make everything else fit when it's, who can we get to come here when all we can offer is $3 million? 855-616-1620. Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Went way longer and way down a path I didn't intend to get to for a post-game show about a very, very frustrating loss to the Charlotte Hornets. We'll come back. We'll take a look at Friday, the NBA Cup standings, and all the details for Group C. Can the Bucks remain unbeaten in group play? That's the next question on everyone's mind. We'll revisit coming up next. All right, Friday night, you expect, not hope, you expect to see a better showing. A big part of that is there's no reason to believe Giannis is not playing. Doc said before the game, all but said, they held Giannis out of this one basically for rest. We targeted this game, the 5 games in 7 days stretch. He has been on the injury report. He's missed 2 games now. 12 games this season. He has been on the injury report in, I believe, 5 of the other ones. So it's nothing major, but it's not nothing. But I expect to see a much different version of this team on Friday, if for no other reason than it is a home game. And the thing that everybody in basketball media loves to say, when there's no great way to back it up and quantify it other than, like, let's pull the home and road splits and look at the county numbers and how those improve. But your role players do tend to play better at home than on the road. So guys, again, that we highlighted tonight, like Bobby Portis, who I thought was good, but Bobby Portis, Cole Anthony was not. Even guys like AJ and Gary Trent Jr., I mentioned them a couple of times. We didn't have time to get into the numbers. It hasn't been great. If we look at the full 12 games, Gary Trent Jr., I believe, is still shooting 37% on threes, which, I mean, you'll take. He was, what, 42, 43% last year, despite an abysmal start. That's the thing. I don't know. I haven't dug into the splits to really say one way or another of, well, this is just who Gary is early in the season. I think he'd be one of the first to tell you he hasn't played to the level he is capable of through these first 12 games of the season. And again, days like today, when you don't have a Giannis on the floor, you need more. They're both averaging, Gary Trent Jr. and AJ, I believe, 6.5 three-point attempts per game. Those numbers have been down the last couple of games. You had 30 attempts tonight. What we know is, first and foremost, you need Giannis on the floor. You're not going to be in trouble every game, but just how you stack up against the rest of these elite teams, it's a pretty big difference. when you don't have them versus when you do. So that's first and foremost. But you have to, absolutely have to, start getting defensive rebounds. We are not going to see the improvement that you need to see if that is not going to be the case this season. So the rebounding needs to improve. You got to start taking more threes as well. Giannis on the floor is going to change a lot of that. It's not all of it. That's not the panacea. But Giannis creates those looks and shot opportunities. So I expect a much different performance. I expect the team to look much different in the second go-round against the Hornets. And, you know, not that you need it after a performance like tonight, but there's even more reason for investment, given it is an NBA Cup game. The Bucks right now are one of two teams in their group who are unbeaten in group play so far this season. The Bucks, the Miami Heat, they're both 1-0. Your group is the Bucks, the Heat, the Bulls, the Knicks, and this Charlotte Hornets team. So you win on Friday, you are 2-0. And we'll see what happens with Miami, and it sets up the final week of the Cup group play game, that is, stage, that is, where the Bucks are playing the night before Thanksgiving in Miami against the Heat and the night after Thanksgiving in New York against the Knicks. Those are the big ones. We'll see, too, if this team can get to, 10-0 in group play of the NBA Cup. And let's do the quick math here. 14-1 they would be. I believe they're 13-1 right now in cup in NBA Cup play. So, yes, disappointing night. I expect a better performance. I expect the team to look much different. I expect Giannis to play. And now that's going to be the thing go forward, is when you do have the full complement of your guys, or at least until KPJ comes back, the fullest complement you could expect to have, when you do have that group on the floor, how do you look in those areas that we've already spotlighted and called out and say, you got to stop fouling so much. You got to defend without fouling. You got to start to get to the free throw line as well. Now, granted, some of that is Giannis has been hacked and he's not getting to the line quite as much, but you got to improve your free throw rate. You got to hit free throws when you're getting there, which in fairness, I do think the Bucks have gotten better at these past couple of games here, but you got to rebound the ball. Friday night, Charlotte Hornets, another NBA Cup game, 7 o'clock tip-off from Fiserv Forum. 6:30 is when our pregame coverage begins. As always, be sure to stick around after another Cup game for Bucks Talk. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in tonight. The calls that we got, the interaction that we got, the thoughts on the trades, the disappointment in what we've seen these past couple of games as well. It's understandable. It will get better. This isn't the low, or I hope this is one of the low points of the season, losing to the Charlotte Hornets on the road. We'll talk to you once again Friday nights with more Bucks Talk.